welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. I believe our talk today is a most important discussion about how we can better orient our lives. Let me explain. For decades, I have believed the idea that we all possess some sort of built-in internal gyroscope to align our daily lives with our personal values. As you well know, the technical function of a gyroscope is to detect the deviation of an object from its desired orientation. And isn't that true for us as well, that we're trying to detect any kind of deviation from what our desired outcome would be, that's in alignment with our core self and that's profitable and fulfilling for us? Well, because of that, I truly believe that we need this personal, internal, gyroscopy type of thing. Well, our guest today, very special guest, Zen crier DeBrooke, has devoted more than 30 years to exploring this very subject. She describes it in her book, Your Internal Guidance System. She calls it an IGS, not a gyroscope. I like the IGS much better. She's also founded and manages the Smart Soul Academy, which encapsulates 30 years of her exploring and learning. And her online academy contains trainings and systems that will enable you to master the use of your IGS, or internal guidance system. On today's show, Zen and I talk about accessing and implementing your internal guidance system. I'm very into this topic and can't wait for Zen's expertise. With that said, let's bring on Zen crier DeBrooke. Zen, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Hey, I am so excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Charlie.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. This is, I think this is such an important topic, Zen. I think you've been on to something for some time now.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, where do you want to go first?
Okay, that was my next question. I was ready to get her going. you know what? I'm very interested in this, and I have, you know, I've researched a bit and have a bit of idea what it is, but could you explain to our audience sort of briefly a very high level idea of what you call an internal guidance system?
Yeah, so at a very high level, what I've discovered and researched is that every single person is born with an internal guidance system. And what I mean by that is, it's a system that helps you manage whether your thoughts are bringing you into alignment with success, happiness, joy, or out of alignment with success and happiness and joy. And it's a physical sensation that's in the body. And for years, we have been thinking that what this sensation is an emotion or a reaction. And in truth, it's guidance. And it feels like when you have a lump in your throat, a tightness in your chest, or a sick rock-like feeling in your solar plex area. And that's actually your internal guidance system activating and giving you guidance on what you're thinking in the moment.
So there is a very powerful relationship between what's impacting us physically also impacts our emotions, intellect, our thoughts, and the way we end up guiding ourselves. Is that correct?
Kind of. Our thinking is what creates the sensations in our body. And the only thing that the sensations in our body are responding to is what we're thinking in the moment.
You know, you wrote somewhere that we are not our thoughts, and that we can reprogram ourselves to create new neural pathways that can address how to overcome our issues, such as stress or false beliefs or things that block us from being the person we want to be. I would like to hear more on "We Are Not Our Thoughts," because that is so curious for me, because I have thought exactly the opposite, that we are our thoughts. But you're suggesting that's not true. Yeah, yes, right? Yes.
Yeah. So go ahead and recall, and your listeners can do the same, recall a memory that you have. Could be from yesterday, could be one of your favorite memories in life, your wedding day, something you accomplished.
Okay.
Now, as you're replaying that memory, are you able to observe yourself having that memory?
Myself.
Yeah, are you able to see yourself having those thoughts? What I mean by that is I'm asking you to recall a memory, and the memory's coming up, and you're able to like experience as well as notice that you're having the memory. Does that make sense?
Precisely, it is. Yeah. So yes, I can feel the experience of it. It was a very
profound
experience.
And also notice that you're having it, right?
Yes.
So any time, so that there's two things happening there. There's your thinking, and then there's you witnessing what you're thinking. There's you noticing what you're thinking about something. And especially as we get more and more mature in our lives, you know, you'll suddenly awaken to like, wow, I really don't like this person. I'm sitting here not liking this person, and I can, you know, what is that about?
And you know, this person being me.
No, anyone, you know, like you're just out and about and you're having a conversation and you suddenly realize, I don't like this person. Well, how do you notice those thoughts? And so there's two things happening. There's your mind, and I want to preface here that I believe that our minds are software programs that get created between the ages of 0 and 7, the programming, the thinking, the way we think, the way we interpret things. And then there's this other part of us that occasionally will rise above the thinking and notice what's happening to us from like a third place. And I'm not talking about psychological disassociation. I'm simply talking about being able to witness that. And so what I've been researching is, what is that ability that we have, and how is that observer, is what I call it, how does that enable us to change our thinking? By witnessing it and changing it, shifting it, making choices about it instead of just thinking.
So I have been told by a couple of therapists that it's been a very, very helpful advice, that so many times in my life when I've struggled with something and had fears or self-incrimination or shame or guilt, that I am not looking necessarily at the event through my adult eyes, but through my childhood eyes. When I view something from my childhood perspective, it becomes negative. When I view it through my adult eyes, it just becomes a part of growing up. It's just a natural thing. It's not a big deal. And so those are, is that close to what you're saying? Because they're two very different perspectives.
Yes, they are. And so that's part of the big problem that we're in as a human species, as human beings, is that between the ages of 0 and 7, most of the way that we think is programmed. For instance, your dad can walk in the door and your mother has an instant reaction to him being home. And we catalog that. And not only do we catalog that, but we as young babies and toddlers and preschoolers all the way up to age 7, we believe that that's what's supposed to happen because that's what we witnessed. So when we grow up and we either enter the house or we have a spouse and they come home, we have a tendency to emulate our experiences. Part of the reason why they say we marry our moms or we marry our dads, depending whether you're male or female or somewhere on the spectrum, right? It's because we relate and we know how to act with that person, as well as we're carrying out patterns that we've seen. We're kind of attracted to that because that's what our family life looked like. Well, these programs are completely and totally the whole of our thinking, how we feel about ourselves, how we feel about the world around us, whether it's safe, whether it can be trusted, whether it's not safe, how strong we are, how weak we are, what food we think we want to eat and don't want to eat, what jobs we can have, you know, all of it comes in during that period. And then as we go about living our lives, we have this screen or this filter we look through from that programming. And that programming most often is not something that makes us happy. but we don't know how to escape it. And that's what I've been researching with the internal guidance system is this. We have a physical sensation in our body that lets us know when we're operating from our childhood programming instead of who we are today as an adult.
Boy, that's a mouthful. You have, you know, I've noticed when we talk, you are so intelligent. You have so many things to say that you could say a lot in a couple of sentences. It's very impressive.
Thank you.
Is it not sort of like a you know, you write elsewhere that we'll talk about neural pathways, and these neural pathways are formed, it seems to me, according to your beliefs, between ages of 0 and 7 or 1 and 7 or whatever. And they are sort of like, are they sort of not like ruts, Zen, that we just sort of fall into and we get there and we're following this neural pathway, this rut in the road, and we don't even know we're following it, where it is a totally unconscious act that's going on in our behalf. And you're suggesting perhaps that we take it on more consciously, do something with it.
Well, so yes, and whenever you feel this tightness in your body, so you don't have to take it on consciously. The truth of the matter is all of the suffering that we're feeling as human beings is coming from thinking that is not true or not going to happen. And I know that's kind of like, what is she talking about? So this programming is not necessarily accurate in the present moment that we're in. So I know you and I have already talked about this, so I'd love for you to give the first answer that you gave when we first talked. But I'm going to give you an example of what kind of programming I'm talking about, and so your listeners can kind of have an idea. So what color is a yield sign in the U.S.?
Well, of course, it's yellow.
Yes. And so most everybody that I talk to who's a native to the United States will say yellow and black. And in 1971, Congress changed the yellow and black yield sign to red and white. And by the time it was 1974, they had all of the yellow and black yield signs have been taken out of commission and were all red and white. But we don't have a system in our minds to upgrade something that's not accurate. As we're driving down the road, our mind doesn't look for things that have changed. So when you see a red and white yield sign, the mind doesn't even notice it because, to be perfectly honest, it thinks that yellow yield signs are what exists. And you'll drive past them all the time. Now you'll find one, you'll be like, oh my gosh, there are red and white yield signs.
I know. I looked it up on iStock Photo, and all they had was red and white, and I was shocked.
Yeah, yeah. And so the reason why even people who were born after 1974 still say yellow and black, it's because it's still in our collective consciousness. They still produce it on billboards, book covers, T-shirts. Even my 2-year-old son was watching Sesame Street in 2016, and they had the guy from Frozen that was the snowman dancing around with a yellow and black yield sign singing. So now even he at 2 had that put into his mind. And the thing that's important is we have all of these yellow and black yield signs that are our thinking. They're the programming between 0 and 7. And the way that you know what is programmed in there is it's all of your head noise. It's the chatter. It's the way you think about how people are looking at you. It's the way you're thinking about other drivers on the road. It's how you think about the way the response that your spouse has to you, or how your kids are supposed to behave, or what your boss means when they make a particular comment. The interpretation that is our head noise is our programming. And this internal guidance system, this lump in the throat, tightness in the chest, or sick feeling, is responding to any yellow yield signs, any inaccurate thinking that you have, and alerting you to it so that you can then consciously change it. So it's like a beautiful little consciousness alarm bell inside the center of our body.
So is that happening all the time and we don't even notice that, Zen?
Yes, all the time.
So we don't even notice the physical response, although it is happening. If we were to pay attention, we would feel physical response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my research, I believe that because we didn't know that it existed, and we've had these sensations happening in our body, we went ahead and named them. So we named them stress, worry, fear, anxiety, overwhelm, frustration, irritation, guilt, impatience. I could go on and on. All of these things that I just listed, plus quite a few more, they cause this tightness in our body. And this tightness in our body is not in response to what's happening around us. It's responses to what we're thinking about the experience we're having. And so it's not, I get a bad feeling about that guy. Instead, you have to look at what you're thinking about that guy and then realize that your thinking is off about that person. So we have this thing a little bit backwards. And what I've been doing through the Smart Soul Academy is training people how to get back into the accurate awareness of what's happening with their body and their thinking so that they can find the yellow yield signs and get rid of them. And then the world is amazing because it's like opportunity after opportunity after opportunity begin to happen because you're not stuck in that rut, as you called it earlier.
You talk a bit about reprogramming. And is that just becoming, is reprogramming a matter of becoming more aware of the sources? I love what you say when you say you sort of redefine, we don't respond to an incident as much as we respond to our interpretation of that incident.
Yes. And if that interpretation is accurate, you'll feel like an expanded kind of open feeling in the center of your body. And if it's inaccurate, it's based on old information programming, you'll get a tightness in your body to let you know to stop and look at it differently. And then the tools in Smart Soul Academy is part of how I've unraveled how are you able to look at it differently. You know, if you didn't even know that the yield signs were yellow and black, then how would you know to find in a particular situation that something is not true for you? Because you're in it, and it's like, what do you mean? I can't even see it. And this tool that we were born with gives us access to knowing when something is that we're interpreting is off, not right, out of alignment. Why don't we go ahead and do the exercise? And
I want to do the exercise. I just said, you know, I was just going to ask that. Is that what is the tool, and how do we use it? But I have one question before I do that, and my question is: we feel a tightness in our body, but you go to not just tightness, you delineate and go to specific areas in your body that tells you different things. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. Yep. All three areas mean something different. So the throat is when you're having thoughts about yourself that are disempowering you. I'm stupid. I can't do it. I can't work it out. It's never going to happen for me. Why does everything go wrong for me? They don't love me. Those kinds of thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
The chest area expands and contracts based on real-time information and what you're thinking in the moment. And then the solar plex area, where the ribs come together, that's about a belief system or a big idea that you have about yourself, life, the world around you, that's not true for you.
I think you call them openings, and we'll talk about that. Is there a physical feeling with those?
Yeah, it's an expanded, open feeling with no tension in the center of the body whatsoever. And so you can either feel what I call it a neutral, where it's just this beautiful, peaceful, easy, no tension in the body feeling, or it can actually feel like as if you have more breath, more energy, more air. It's like
mm-hmm,
like you're expanding, mm-hmm, opening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's do your exercise because I actually did it. So I have feedback for you. So, but you need to explain the exercise so our audience gets it.
Wonderful. So if you're on the go, wherever you are listening to this, this is often easier just the first one or two times that you do it. You don't have to do this exercise to feel your IGS. You're already feeling it, but we're just going to slow everything down and drop into the body for a minute. So if you are able to sit down, I want you to just go ahead and do so. It's often easier if you close your eyes. Of course, don't do that if you're walking or driving. Just sit down, close your eyes, and feel the bottom of your feet resting on the surface they're on. Feel the bottom of your feet, the soles, and you might notice that there's a little tingling, maybe a little warmth there. And then feel the palms of your hands once again, you'll notice a little tingling or warmth. And then pay attention to your feet and hands at the same time. Feet and hands, same time. So you can, they're all tingling. Now I'm going to give you a sentence, and I want you to just let it float through your mind like a cloud does through the sky while you're focusing on your feet and hands. And notice if there's any sensation in the center of your body. Feet, hands. Here's this first statement. I do not have an internal guidance system. I do not have an internal guidance system. Noticing any sensation.
Do I notice a sensation?
Feet. We've got a second statement, so give me 1 second.
Okay.
Go back to feeling your feet and hands. Feet and hands. And here's the second. Go ahead and hold that thought again. I do not have an internal guidance system. Noticing any sensation. And here's the second statement. I do have an internal guidance system. I do have an internal guidance system. Once again, noticing if there's any change in the sensation in the center of your body. Okay, wiggle your toes, open your eyes. What'd you experience, Charlie?
I experienced, now, you know, I hope I don't experience to mess up the test, but I experienced with the first statement that I do not have it, I experienced a tightness in my chest. And when you said I did have it, I had a complete release.
Yes. And that is what I'm talking about. The first sensation, it can show up different places because all of our minds are completely unique to us. And it can be a tightness in the throat, lump in the chest, sick feeling in the stomach, or a tightness all over. Some people feel like it's a clenched feeling, or
yeah,
they can't breathe, like suddenly they can't breathe. Yeah. I call that a closing. Had to name it something, and I look at it as like energy's closing off in our body. It's like getting tighter and closing off. And then with the second statement, people feel a release, or as if something like lightly breathes them. They have more air. Some people report an upward V kind of expansion feeling, and that's called an opening. And this is happening all day long to all of us. When, you know, you'll get a tight feeling in your stomach as you're thinking about a tax bill that's due or some big challenging conversation you're about to have, and or you'll feel a tightness in your chest, or maybe you'll get in trouble for something with somebody that you care about, and you'll have a lump in your throat because you made a big mistake and you're upset about it. All day long, these things have been happening since we were born. And I spent the last 23 years full time, decoding how this works in relationship to our mind so that we as humans can stay in that relaxed, open space all the time. And then this comes back to your being interested in the neural programming part of this work, right? I think that's the part you're pretty excited about.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so what it is when you're feeling this sensation, what you're thinking is not true or not going to happen. People say, well, how do you know that then? Well, I've worked with 40,000 people, and I've got 4,000 master students, and it just is the truth. And I don't ask people to take my word for it. Once you start using your internal guidance system and doing the practices like at Smart Soul Academy, what happens is it proves it to you itself. It consistently has this ability to be in the truth and right. And so when you're in it, let's say you're in the middle of a conversation and you're upset and you're this person, like for instance, you're thinking to yourself, this person doesn't respect me. They don't care. They don't appreciate what I do for them. And you notice that you're tight, that there's this tightness. We have a phrase that we use when we first start learning to use our IGS, and that is, I am closed. That means what I'm thinking is not true or not going to happen, and that'll create an opening. Now, whatever the thought pattern is that's in your mind, the head noise in that situation is, we then train people how to be able to quickly and easily understand what they're thinking, and then we do what's called a pivot. Where there's a way to change your thinking to find the thought that will open you. And when you find it and it opens you, like the second statement in the exercise we just did, you have started a new neural pathway because your nervous system has had a positive response to the new thought. Now the old thoughts about not being appreciated and not being respected, that begins to go away because you begin to feel it feels like it's not true. And then as you hold your thinking into this new place that you found that's opening, that actually feels true. Like, it feels right. And so it's very easy to choose the new thoughts, and the old pattern begins to go extinct. It begins to die away. And so when you use this tool that you're born with, you're constantly repatterning and reprogramming the neural pathways of your brain as to what is true for you now. All the training at Smart Soul Academy is just easily taking away the programming, you finding that what it is actually true for you and authentic for you today in what's happening in your life, and then being able to stay on that path for the rest of your life. You don't have the old thinking anymore. You don't have the old sabotaging patterns or the things that cause you aggravation and frustration and irritation in your life. They just fall away as part of you learning to listen to your internal guidance system.
Let me tell you an interesting story that's this exercise. And you know, it's not that I didn't believe you. It's just that I thought it would take some time to do this, for the neural pathways to be cleansed. I have until Tuesday. I have for the last couple of weeks been rather feeling in a life malaise. I have a book that I'm trying to write that I can't seem to make progress on, and it was really frustrating me. And I think that, with a couple of other things that are going on in my life that are, you know, that are stress producers, that I've been able to work my way around those, but still have this general sort of malaise, you know, kind of almost like the beginnings of a depression, but it mm-hmm. wasn't a depression. And so I tried your exercise. I did it in my, you know, I do prayers a couple times a day, and I did it in my prayers, and I did, you know, my feet on the floor, my palms up, and I said the words that this means what I'm thinking is not true and it's not going to happen, and I just kind of focused my attention around the book. And I said that over and over, and, you know, I felt better. The next morning when I woke up, it was a 180-degree turn. I did not feel the malaise that I had felt. And I'm telling you, it was a disempowering, immobilizing sort of feeling that I had, that I came on to where I'm just ready, bring it on. I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to attack it. Now, I'm reluctant to say that I did it because of the exercise, because I can't believe that 10 minutes of an exercise is going to change 2 weeks of malaise, but it looks like it did, you know, so that's really funny. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, within the first 2 weeks of people starting to do the practices and the training in the academy, they report that everything feels different for them in their life. They have more confidence. They are encouraged. They feel positive, especially nowadays. They come in and they're just exhausted. They're tired. They're frightened. They're confused about what they're supposed to be thinking and what's happening. And within 2 weeks of just starting to tune into this part of themselves and working with their thoughts to find the openings, what happens is they're like, I feel completely different. I feel as if I can do things. I feel as if I have a future. I feel like we're going to be okay. I've cleared up arguments with people that have been longstanding little things that I know now see my part in them, and it shifts. It's that fast. It's very quick. Because, you know, we're used to being sucked into the, you know, spiral of our thinking, the same thing over and over and over and over. I mean, it's like a record player. And one of the biggest things that people are reporting is how exhausted they are with their own mind. Just tired of it. You know, I'm tired of thinking about all these things, these fearful things, and these worries and these stress. And as soon as they get a break, it feels like a brand new day. As soon as they're able to stop that and then have focus, and they're no longer foggy headed, and literally that opening, it feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Good. Yeah. Is this
they want more?
Is this somehow at all related to some sort of application of positive thinking, or is that very different?
Very different. So that's the interesting thing. This is not positive or negative thinking. For instance, my brother disappeared. He was in a road trip by himself, and with wintertime, and he was going from Idaho to Southern Oregon, and he never showed up. And he was in a wheelchair. He was able to drive in a wheelchair. And 2 days into him not being found, I thought, I'm never going to see my brother again. And I felt that expanded feeling that we felt in the exercise, which means it's true. And he did die. We looked for him for 10 days, and he had gone up a road in a snowstorm that he didn't see the sign that the road was closed. And he got stuck, high-centered on a landslide that he couldn't see in the snow. And nobody knew to go up that road because it was closed. That's just one of...
Tell me about... You used a term that I'm really curious about that I'm not sure we all quite understood, and that is you had an expanded feeling. What is an expanded feeling?
That's the opening, so the release of tension. And
okay.
This works more like a compass, okay? Picture it like north is a big opening. Like if you have a creative insight and it takes hold of your mind and you just can't stop thinking about it because there's just so much energy and your body is filled with excitement and you're not tired and you could work on it for days, that would be a big opening. Or true love or affection or gratitude, big can be big opening. And then as the needle goes from north down toward east or west, those openings get a little less, a little less, a little less, until where I like to think of east or west as a neutral sensation. You just feel good. You feel calm. There's no real big energy coming through. You're just having a great life in a centered, aligned feeling inside your body. Now, as you go towards south, that needle, it's a little closing and then a bigger closing and then a bigger closing until you can get down to where you're feeling sheer terror, panic, right? That is a deep closing. That means that what you're thinking is absolutely not true, not going to happen. You need to stop thinking about it. It's no use putting your time there at all. An example of this would be if you're on your way like to the airport and you think you've forgotten your passport or your ID, and all of a sudden you're driving along. Have you ever had this experience where you go, that feeling?
You mean like every one of my 12 flights a year?
Yeah, exactly. That feeling is a deep closing, and it means you did not forget your passport. If you did forget your passport and the thought comes across your mind, it looks like this. Oh, man. And the person goes, what? And I'm like, I forgot my ID. And you can feel it. You're confident in it. It's open. You're like, I forgot my ID. Once you start, you know, right now it's a little like clunky to think about because it's a completely new way of understanding the physical experiences that you're having inside the center of your body. And these are not emotions. These are separate from your emotions. You can be in the middle of an emotional experience. Emotions are chemicals in the body that are released based on a story you're telling yourself or that your mind is generating. And it creates an emotional reaction, and that produces chemicals that flood the body, very much like a drug, right? So in the middle of anger, you can have thoughts that are true and open you and still be angry. Or you can have thoughts that are not true and are feeling closed because they're not true. You feel this tightness and you're still angry, but this sensation system of the internal guidance system is still operating, giving you guidance on what you're thinking. Angry thoughts that are closing are very destructive, like some of the riots and the destruction that we saw in the past couple of years with the upset that we've had. However, opening anger is very change-driven and nourishing. This is stuff like Martin Luther King Jr. and Gandhi, where the thinking of the righteousness of what needs to happen is true, and the anger at the injustice of the experience that people have had to be in because of this is also true. And so it's not our emotions. This is something completely separate, which also was something that was very fascinating when I began researching it. This is separation.
Well, what do you have? My producer was asking me if he wanted a break, and I want to do it after this question. About feelings that we have, not necessarily an assigned, we don't know the designation, we don't know if it's going to be, we have a fear, we're anxious about something, but we know it could be either good or bad, you know, we don't know what it is other than we just don't know if we want to put in the work. You know, it's kind of fitting. It seems to me to fit in between affirmation and, you know, affirmation of a of an untruth or of a truth? My question doesn't feel like it's making sense, but it makes sense to me.
Yeah, so anxiety is always closing. Nervousness can be excitement. A lot of times people will say they're nervous when they actually mean they're excited, right? They've misinterpreted it. One of the programs that we have in the Smart Soul Academy is called the Creating Emotional Authenticity, because we pick up the program of emotions a lot of times from our parents, and we take the language on. And after the break, I'd love to share with you an experience where my whole life I've been called jealous. And it turns out that I wasn't jealous at all. It was a completely different thing I was feeling, but everybody had labeled me jealous. And it was using my IGS that corrected that, and I was able to actually heal it and be through with it.
Well, let's use that as the first question is about your experience with jealousy, and we'll do that right after the break. We'll take a very quick break and come right back. Hi there, you're listening to Charlie Hedges in the Next Chapter with Charlie, and my very, very special guest today, Zen Crier DeBrook, who is talking about our internal guidance system that keeps us online with our deepest and most authentic, truest self, I would say. And Zen has an example of something she thought negatively of herself for most of her life, and then use some processes that she's developed to overcome that. Zen, do you want to tell us that story?
Yeah, I would love to. So in high school, when I started dating and things and had friends, and I was labeled as jealous. I had these deep feelings, and they were irritating to people that I felt the way I felt, and they were saying, you need to stop being so jealous, 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 jealous. And so I began working on jealousy. I didn't want to be jealous. I didn't want to feel these feelings that were uncomfortable and painful in relationship to my intimate relationships. And so I worked on it. I couldn't solve it. And so in my mid-20s, I was listening to this talk radio show, and this woman was talking about the sensations and the experience of being insecure. And as she listed everything, it dawned on me. I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I am insecure. And I got this big opening, that expanded feeling, this feeling of, you can feel it when you start, when the first time you really feel it consciously, you're like, wow, that's an opening. And I felt it. And I called my boyfriend, it was pretty funny at the time, and I was like, I'm insecure. And he was like, what? I was just a trick question, what do you mean? I said, I'm not jealous. I don't want to possess people and not have them have any other friends or relationships. Every time I see one of my friends or my loved one talking to someone else, I begin comparing myself to that person they're talking to and how I'm not good enough. That's where the pain was coming from. But it wasn't until I had that opening and I could actually work on what was really wrong with me that I could heal it. And so that's what I mean. Thinking of yourself as being insecure doesn't, you know, that would be considered a negative thought. You should feel guilt or shame. But no, that's not the way the internal guidance system works. If you're something that's true about you, even if it's uncomfortable or devastating, you'll get the opening sensation, this sense of expansion in your body. You know that it's true. It's a level of discernment that's fresh and new. And not only that, you don't have any of the negative internal experience that has you weakened and unable to handle the truth. You feel confident and self-assured by that sensation. When you're feeling closed, tight, that means what you're thinking is not true or not going to happen. And there's lots of people out there who are studying personal development and self-actualization and things who believe that there are things about them that are broken, and they're not. They're not. And if you feel this anxiety or this tightness or frustration, shame or guilt, all of those things are closing, meaning that the labels that you've been given, the things that you think are broken, are not broken. You're wasting your time working on them.
How did you come up, this is fascinating. How did you come up with this, Zen? I mean, this is so different than anything we've heard before, and you've been doing it for over 20 years and, you know, with tons of experience. Mm-hmm. How did you discover this methodology?
Well, I had a rough childhood, lots of abuse, And I sued my parents for emancipation when I was 17 and went to work for myself, you know, work myself in order to support myself to get away from all the drama. And when I was in the world, I was making mistakes, like getting in an argument with a roommate and then which would get me kicked out and I'm living it out of my car, or, you know, having a problem with a coworker or a boss and quitting instantly, you know, and walking out the door. And now I don't have a job and I'm expecting them to chase me down the sidewalk. And I was making all of these really self-sabotage moves and I couldn't see it. And so a friend of mine gave me a cassette tape from a little-known teacher at the time, Abraham Hicks, Esther Hicks. And I put that cassette tape in my car and listened to it over and over and over. And what they really wanted me to get was the law of attraction, that I'm bringing through my energy these things in. So there was about a five-minute little space in there that was talked about how when we feel a tightness in our body, that means that our thinking is not true, out of alignment, taking us somewhere that we don't want to go, creating something we don't want to create. And that when we feel centered, calm, or expanded in the center of our body, that means that our thinking is aligned, moving us to where what we want to have happen and how we want our lives to be. And I knew that that tightness in my body was so loud before I did something I regretted. And yet I couldn't stop myself. It was like a chain reaction. I'd get going in my head, that head noise I was talking about, and then a trajectory would get started, and then I would blow it, and then it would take a few days to calm down because I'm still having the conversation in my head with the boss or the roommate or whatever. And then I would be really disappointed with the situation I was in, and it would, and either victimized by blaming them or, you know, realizing that it was me. And so I hung on to that as like a life preserver. And I began trying to figure out how this thing worked. How do I change that chain reaction when I felt that tightness? And at first, I'm telling you, Charlie, this was really difficult. It took me 9 years to really get to a place where I felt semi-confident. Because when you're looking at your own perspective and your thoughts, that yellow yield sign, and there's still people in your audience that are sitting there going, I know it's yellow. I know it's yellow. And that's exactly what I'm talking about, is we're so convinced at the story. We're so convinced at what we're thinking that we can't see it any other way. And so I spent 9 years trying to figure out, how can I see this another way? How can I get out of what I believe is true? How? And I slowly but surely began to unravel. When I'm frustrated, what am I thinking? I'm thinking that this thing, this situation will never change, or this thing that's broken or is not working will never change. Frustration is always about a person who won't change, for instance. Guilt is never opening. It's only about what programming you have about what makes you a good or a bad person. It has nothing to do with the reality of the experience. Remorse is opening. Remorse is something that you want to go after and you want to make amends when you have the experience of remorse. But guilt, no action. It just runs around in your head torturing you. Nothing ever happens. Nothing ever changes. It's a program. And I came up with all these various ways to find those yellow yield signs and then find the actual thought that will open me. And so it wasn't until I took this from being a high school dropout all the way up through finishing school and becoming a tech CEO in San Francisco in 1996. And I used this in opening to opening to opening. This was my guidance system to change my life, and it worked, and it worked fast. And I really didn't know what I had developed or understood, because it was just a personal practice to save my own life, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't until the crash, the dot-com crash in San Francisco, where I was good, because I'm still following these openings, all these tumultuous thinking and situations that were going on. I was able to maneuver my way through and stay in this open space and feel good. And my friends weren't. And they were like, either tell me the doctor that's given you these drugs that makes it okay.
Yeah.
Or tell us what you're doing, because
yeah.
I'm about to jump off a building. I'm so distraught, you know, and you're okay. How? This is torturous. I mean, we're all living on each other's couches and Stone Soup City, man. We were all so broke from losing our jobs and things. And I'm still, you know, doing good. So that's when I first started to realize, hey, I have something here. And then I began to learn how to teach other people to use this. And it turns out that it's captivated me my entire life. And it's one of the most exciting developments, cutting-edge developments in our human experience. I can't tell you how extraordinary it is to live by this.
Yeah, and you have thousands of people that have experienced this as well.
Yes.
You know what I'm wondering? This may feel off topic, but I don't think it doesn't. It may be, but I don't feel like it is. What does what you're explaining about opening and closing, does that have any explanation of our political divide in the United States today?
Absolutely. 100%. It's not off at all. Fear is always closing, no matter what. And what is happening, what I'm seeing, is that we are being delivered constant bombardment of information that is, that the theme of it is fear,
right,
or anger, or blame, or victimization. And we're being riled up, even if you're not watching the news, which most of America is not by the numbers, it's everybody around you is still talking about it, and you're still experiencing it when they, you know, whether they say, you know, put on your mask before you go in here, or why don't you have a mask on, put on a mask, all of that. And closing, when somebody is in a closed state and you stay there for a long period of time, a couple of things happen depending on your personality. Either you become depressed, which shows the reason why we have these skyrocketing suicide rates,
right,
and drug abuse
and drug
addiction.
Abuse, yeah.
Yep. Or you become violent inside, like you're aggravated all the time, right? And then the other thing that happens is you just collapse in fear, and you're not able to function. You just go into this comatose state where you're just doing whatever you need to do to get by, but you can't actually get out of it. And that's because the life force energy, this tightness, that I believe it actually begins to take hold of our health. So when I listen to both sides, I hear, and not from a place of wanting to be right or wanting to find someone wrong, but from a place of, what are they really saying? We're saying a lot of the same things on both sides, right? It's either, you know, they're afraid because they don't want to take the vaccine, and they're afraid of what masks are doing to our health and our kids, which there's a really serious problem with our children because of the mask stuff. And they are afraid that this vaccine has not been well researched and it's going to take away the health, right? The other side is afraid that they're going to get COVID, or that somebody that they love who is susceptible to COVID is going to die. They're afraid that if people don't take the vaccine, we're not going to get ahead of this thing and more people are going to die. And they're both afraid of people dying. They're both afraid of things not being able to be solved unless the other side does this particular thing. And they're all really just caring about the people in our country from different places of opinion.
But it's closed thinking.
It is. They're closed because it's fear-based thinking.
And you can't move on from that. How would opening thinking evolve in this situation?
Well, what I find is that there isn't one way. There's a lot of spiritual philosophy and truth that has come out of, for me, I don't preach philosophy or truth to others, but for me personally, I call it little Zen. I have found my way in what I believe to be true because of my openings and really noticing when I'm closed about something and then shifting and finding that opening, and that finds my truth. And what I have come to know as a personal truth is that everybody is supposed to have a different opinion. Everyone is supposed to contribute a different piece of the puzzle. There is no one way. This person may open at getting the vaccine because they have a grandmother who's at risk, and they want to feel safe and comfortable and confident to be able to see them. And this other person may not feel good at getting the vaccine, and it opens them not to get a vaccine. And because we don't even have to know why, it could be that there's something in their body, like the heart situation that's going on with various people. We don't
right.
know all the variables that create problems. But if they're open that they don't need the vaccine, that is what is true for them. My biggest concern and heartache is all the people who made choices because they were afraid, not because they were open. Feel afraid, and that's why they got the vaccine, or afraid, and that's why they didn't get the vaccine, because they didn't make either decision based on what is actually true for them in their unique situation, in their unique place in life. One of the most glorious things that happens for people that study, you know, this work at Smart School Academy is that they get in it with a very short period of time, within 3 to 4 months, 5 months, they have an unshakable knowing about who they are and what is right for them in all situations. It doesn't matter whether it's finances, parenting, relationships, career, health, the world and the future of the world and where it's going. They are able to feel into their body and shift their thinking to find what's true, and then it becomes unshakable. You can't take that away from them. They know, they can feel it. And the moment you try to move them in a direction that is not true for them, they close and they're like, no, that is not right for me. And that, to me, is the most powerful thing that we need in the world as U.S. and global citizens, is an unshakable knowing of what's right for us and being able to chart our way in our communities, our families, all the way up to the decisions we're making at a federal level. We know what's right for us and we're able to stand by it, because right now that's not where we are, and it's breaking people to not have that confidence.
What do we do now when we have these closed feelings, and we've probably already gone over it, but I want to really just specify it. What are our next steps when we find that we're closed and our throat, chest, and solar plexus are tightening, and we are just stuck in a negative rut, in a negative neural pathway? What is the process for overcoming that?
So it's not something I'm going to give your listeners and you the first practice that we do. This is not something that is like, oh, step 1, 2, 3, because everybody's programming, everybody's parenting that they got when they were little, whether it be grandmother, foster care, regular parent, single parent, it's all different. And we've been living with our head noise for our whole lives. And so it's really like difficult at first even stop and remember that, to figure out that you're closed. So the first thing is to realize that whenever you feel stress, and I define stress in with these things, whenever you feel worry, fear, anxiety, overwhelm, frustration, irritation, guilt, doubt, procrastination, impatience, that's like a big old list, I know, but there's even more.
They all work together to me. They all are somewhat synonymous.
Yep, they are all closing. They all cause a tight feeling between your throat and the solar plexus area. Whenever you're in one of those, you stop. And I would encourage your listeners to write this down. You stop, you recognize, oh, I'm really frustrated about this experience right now. That means I am closed. Now, when you say I am closed, that's what you want to write down. That's a pattern interrupt in your brain. You've just done a very, very powerful thing to start reprogramming your mind immediately. And then you say, that means what I'm thinking is not true or not going to happen. This specific two statements together are very important to say just like that, because when you say that means it, that your mind grabs that word. And it starts, what happens is you this little exercise, if you just do it for a week, as often as you feel any of those things I listed, you're going to notice that your mind and your internal guidance system are going to start to meld. They're going to start to connect. When you say, I am closed, that means what I'm thinking is not sure, not going to happen. You're going to feel a little release. That's an opening. One of the big things that people start off with is they're like, I now know when I'm closed. I feel closed all the time, but I can't find an opening. It takes training. That's why I put everything into Smart Soul Academy. But this one statement will at least give you that release, and that release is an opening. It may not be the biggest opening that you can find, because there's different techniques that you have to learn in order to work with your mind. It's a crazy place up there, at least I know mine is. But that slight opening will begin to show you that this part of your body is always, always in relationship to what you're thinking. It's only responding to what you're thinking. And that's the very first thing that you could do. After that, it does take training. I really wish I could just wave a wand and say, boom, you understand your IGS. But
well, I'm going to have
easy.
I'm going to have the Smart Soul Academy on show notes, and I'm going to have your book on show notes. And the Smart Soul Academy has 16 teachings, right? It's kind of a 16-step process, and it's very affordable. It is not, you know, it's not some massively expensive endeavor. And And I would encourage our listeners to check it out, you know, and see how it works for them. I have time for one question, and I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask one that let's just give a real quick response, because it just struck me as so strong. And you have said there's no such thing as fear, and that fear is desire unexpressed. I don't know maybe if it's the same or different, but fear is repressed desire. Talk to me about fear and desire.
So what happens is we come into the world full of desire as babies.
Right. We are. I contend, by the way, that we are born. That is what we are by nature. We are a handful of. We're a,
yes.
a pocket full of desire. That's all we are.
Yes.
We are a pocket full of desire.
And then as we start moving through in our little stages, and somebody slaps our hand, and it's not on purpose, they're just slap our hand because of the stove, away from the stove. Or they tell us we can't have the shiny, beautiful thing. Or, no, you can't go up the stairs because you'll fall. And, you know, we hear all the fear already that we're putting in that situation. Soon we learn to stop. We hold back. You know, the next time the baby goes for the shiny crystal thing, it stops halfway through and goes, no, I'm not allowed to have that. And so over time, these fears go into repression is good. But it's a fear. I just say fear is desire that is unexpressed. And so one of the activities that we do is when you're afraid about something, it could be afraid about buying a house, it could be afraid about stepping into your contribution of something, let's say you want to be a musician or a speaker or become a mom. We have these fears, and if there's an exercise that allows you to go all the way to the bottom of fears to get to the pure desire, and when you get there, there's an opening experience, and that opening we call a divine purchase order approved. It means that is right for you, that opening, and that thing that you desire, and that you can have faith in it, that it's coming or something better.
Thank you. Okay, my last questions. I got one more. Paul was just ready to shut me off, but he's used to me doing one more. Your final chapter of the book, Waiting on Divine Timing. Mm-hmm. Two aspects. Waiting is sometimes an arduous path because we're just so impatient and we want what we want now. And I'd like for you to, in closing, describe the value of waiting, and then just a comment on what do you mean by waiting on the divine?
Yeah. So, you know, impatient, and I agree, I'm very impatient. My mind gets very impatient, but impatience is closing. It's a tightness in the body of inability to wait, or life can't be good until you have the thing. One of the things that that I teach is it's called flow, feeling light, open, and wise. And once you start getting connected to this, there's actually a beautiful upwelling of energy that starts below the solar plexus, and it comes up through the center of your body, and it feels as if it's moving you to the next thing. And we call this flow. And you can literally drop in and move through this slight, beautiful, divine pulse that's coming through you. And that's how we manage our day. That's how you just go from this opening to opening to opening. And then if things start getting clunky and weird and out of flow, you drop back into your listening, wait, and that pull will come back. So the reason why I say waiting on divine timing is because everything is actually very perfect around you. Our minds lead us away from it and makes it all clunky and awful. But we, in every moment, we have something that we're here to achieve, accomplish, be. I like to say we don't have one life's purpose. We have 100,000 life purposes.
That is so true. And, you know, that's a show in and of itself, because we're always looking for life's mm-hmm. purpose. And life's purpose mm-hmm. is multifold. You know, it just depends on the window that you're looking through at that time.
Right. And so in that impatience, if we stay with the impatience, you're actually missing the contribution you're here to make today, right now. And it's always right there. It could be taking a nap to nourish yourself for what's next, cuddling with your child, getting a report done, walking outside, giving somebody a book that like, here's a book I thought about you, and it changes their life. A smile, oh my gosh, just walking around nowadays and being kind and finding the thing that you admire about the person. Like, you have beautiful eyes. Like, Charlie, I love your voice. You have such a great voice for this work, and it's so comforting to listen to you. And these are the things that are our contribution. You're welcome. I mean, this is the stuff that we're here to do, and so getting connected to that, when you have that divine purchase order approved moment, you just let it go and enjoy that it's coming, and be excited in divine fascination of how it's going to get here, and then you go back to, okay, now what? Now what do you have for me to do?
All right, thank you. I want everybody to, I'm going to, as I said, in the show notes will be a link to it just eluded me, Academy, your
Smart Soul
Academy. Smart Soul just left me, and your book, your internal guidance system. I think it will be very, very helpful. Zen Cryer DeBrook, thank you so much for being on the show. This is so enlightening and such different territory. It's unique territory, and I love unique territory, and I applaud your efforts and what you are doing.
Thank you.
And I wish you the very best.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Charlie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Zen. So with that, everyone, thanks for listening to the show. This is Charlie Hedges in the next chapter with Charlie. We're signing off. And bye for now.